Good morning. It's November 9th, 6:49 a.m. Beautiful morning here. Just absolutely gorgeous. It's cold. It's 25 degrees. No wind. So very good. Very good. The Kanski Mountain. I think if I need to, by the end of the day tomorrow, to stay on my 200,000 word for the month track, I need to have 66,000 words by end of day tomorrow. I have 57,000 words, 57 and a quarter, something like that, this morning. So I've got today and tomorrow to write 6,000 words. I'm sorry, 9,000 words. I think we'll do that. We'll probably do at least 7 or 8 today. I haven't gotten any words out yet this morning. Usually I have something around 1,000 words when I go for my walk. This morning I slept till 5, spent an hour catching up on my feed reader and I responded to some threads and a couple of discussion boards. The ideas are percolating. It's an interesting discussion shaping up on the comments section about what that second book should be. The idea that I should write YA because there's a hole in the market is really an interesting one. On the one hand, that's a really poor reason to write a book because there's a hole in the market. The other side of that is it's a really good reason because I think we need to provide literature for young adults, for teenagers in particular, that shows science in a way that is not Dahlgren-esque, that is not Lord of the Flies, that is not totally dystopian, that might actually encourage them to be interested in science, much in the same way that many of us in the 60s and 70s, 50s, were enthused, engaged, I think that's a terrible word, were engaged in science by our own reading of science fiction in that 30 years post-World War II. So I really don't have a lot of desire to write a book that is going to automatically limit its market. Because regardless of what people say about YA, regardless of what people think about YA, YA is not a genre. It is a classification of a subgenre. And it goes across various genres, which means a general science fiction novel with a YA attribute on it has a much narrower market to play in than one that is not designated YA. The points about quarter share being YA, yeah, I think there's probably a certain validity to that in terms of it's a coming of age story. He does overcome some stuff. He does it by being good and honorable. A lot of people have made the connection of the Horatio part of his name to Horatio Alger instead of Horatio Hornblower, which I thought was cool. A Hornblower reference is much more direct because his mother was an ancient lit professor who specialized in Forrester in Melville. So the connection is obvious. However, I don't know. It's an intriguing idea. And since I have very little to lose with this second book, I really do hate to start another series, another set of books that is going to require maintenance. Ishmael Wong books are still the far and away the ones where people are most ready to shoot me if I don't write one again right now. And if it's not Ishmael Goes to College, it damn well better be what happens after he leaves the Iris. Now, I've commented before on the Ishmael Goes to College one, and I really don't have, and this is my problem with it, I really don't have anything I want to say. There is no theme that I am ready to explore in this Ishmael Goes to College. Yes, there are some things that he needs to overcome, common themes that people who go to college need to deal with. How do I find enough time to get my homework done? How do I keep from flunking out? How do I get laid? Where do I find enough beer? And how do I finance this whole operation, given that I generally, most students, have no income? This is particularly difficult for Ishmael because he has not only no income, but has no supporting parents. So while he has a scholarship and he has some cash saved up, it's not enough. We set it up so that it would not be sufficient. But this is not, you know, this is not a story that I have a great deal of investment in. I teach college. I really am not totally interested in writing a college story. Now, if I can come up with a way to explore the idea of education and how education relates to people, how it relates to learning, then perhaps I might do something with it. But that story is dead. I mean, I keep joking about Bedtime for Bonzo and Back to School, but those two books pretty much cover it. So in Animal House, you've basically got pretty much the full dimension of whoever it is goes to college. Now, I went back and looked because I have this very strong impression of Miles Vergovigan, whatever his name is, the C.J. Cherry. Lois McMaster Bujold character, young Miles. And his efforts in the Military Academy of Barriar. Now, I went back and actually looked that up. It's not really a whole book. It's a small section of a larger work. So my impression of that is that, you know, it really doesn't take a whole lot. There's not an awful lot there to talk about. So Ishmael Goes to College is probably not going to happen. Ishmael does go back to Port Newmar. We've talked about that in the past. His next step is to go back to Port Newmar and find that 40 Stanyards later, Margaret Newmar is still the seafood. She's still running the Tai Chi program. She's 100 and, I don't know, I need to figure it out. She's like 170 years old. But she's still trimming the trees, still working in the gardens, and still teaching Tai Chi to the students. So he's going back to find Margaret Newmar, and along the way, he will discover some of his other people from his past. Not necessarily his friends, but people from his past. So there's a lot to go with there, and he does have a rabbit hole to go down. I've got a place to go with this in terms of the open plot points from Ownership. So the stuff that can be done there and stuff that I plan to do there, I need to give it a little bit of rest. I need to be able to do a little more exploration in writing. And I think this NaNoWriMo is really going to be, I hope it's going to be a watershed in that regard, in that this last year I've done a few short pieces. I've struggled with process. I've tried to figure out a bit of analysis about how and what I think and what I write. Up until now, it's been sort of a very caught-in-the-moment kind of experience where I've written what I think about and not worried about how I'm writing it. A lot of people have asked how I'm writing it, and I've given a pretty much stock answer to most of those. A stock answer, by the way, that hasn't really satisfied me a great deal. But in casting about for almost a year, I have yet to find a better answer. So for the moment, I'm happy to put that exploration aside, the foray into the meta-analysis of how does Nathan Lowell write, has really come to a close, a crashing conclusion in November this year, with 57,000 words in 9 days. The answer is one word after another very quickly. From a process standpoint, I have characters, I have a situation, and I write what happens next. And I don't worry about what's happening now. Just writing what happens next, the story is always moving. It's working out. I'm working with the word processor. Ironically, I started this so that I could get the discount coupon for Scrivener, and I'm not even sure that I want to even continue to use Scrivener anymore. It's obviously a perch of fragments too much for me to be able to cope with. And using it for layout is pointless because I don't use it for layout. I know there are a lot of people who export to HTML and export to whatever format they want because Scrivener does that. But I use Lix, L-Y-X, the latex-based paste-up front end. And LaTeX is one of the professional-grade layout engines that's out there. It has been primarily in Unix and Linux, but which has been ported over quite robustly to Windows and I believe Macintosh even. So that's what I use for layout. That's what I use to create the PDF. That's what I use to create, in a certain sense, to create the HTML. I have to clean that up a bit and fiddle with it some in order to make it actually work. But it works quite well. And I'm very pleased with how it comes out. So, the Scrivener for me at this point is sort of like, it's cool. It was a good tool. It was worth exploring. It's not helping with the way that I work, which is a very stream of consciousness idea. It's a very put one word after another, keep going, and the process within Scrivener is constantly being interrupted, if you're going to use it right, for data entry tasks, for the creation of outside reference cards, for the creation of content that is not the story itself, but supporting content to help the author write the story. And while I do confess I found those interesting and useful tools in dealing with Cape Grace, I've also found that working strictly in a word processor that has full keyword search works just as well. What was that guy's name? Was it Robertson or Roberson? Search on the name. Easy. Found it. First name was Peter. Search on all Peters. Wasn't any trouble finding it. And I didn't have to do anything special to capture that data. It's all part of the file. So it works very well for me. It might not work as well for somebody else. Everybody's process is different. But it's really been interesting to me to see what a difference in my throughput, what a difference in my production rate. Just going back to my roots, open a word processor and write the story. It's been huge. It's been, not only has my output been really very high, but it has been an enlightening experience for me as well from the meta level of taking a look at how has NaNoWriMo helped me to break out of what some of you have identified as a writer's block, which I'm not 100% convinced that that's technically writer's block, as much as it is total distraction and complete shutdown of a higher order functioning, which is one of the things that I've been suffering lately. So, interesting. The big thing that NaNoWriMo gave me is the excuse to say to the people in my house, don't bother me, I'm writing. I have a goal, I have a deadline, I need to meet it. Here we go. You want to talk to me, see me after 6 o'clock. You want to talk to me, see me after 4 o'clock. You want to talk to me, I'll be stopping in an hour to get a cup of coffee, talk to me then. And this month has been very useful in that regard, particularly in that my wife, who is about, I think she went over 8,000 words yesterday, which is still not enough to be up to date, but which has been steadily getting bigger every day, has come to realize that putting words together in a coherent pattern is not as easy as she might have thought. And that, you know, living with me and having me crank out book after book after book in the past really hasn't helped her understand what it is that I go through in order to actually produce 5,000 words a day or 10,000 words a day, day after day. Doing it once is one thing, as some people have discovered. Doing it on a regular basis is something else altogether different. And between stamina and cussedness, I think you have to have more cussedness than actual stamina. But that's just me. So it's interesting to observe at the meta level, to have this opportunity to take a walk in the morning and think about what's happened so far during the month, and to extrapolate on what might happen next. My goal is to have these two books in draft by the end of the month. Now, it might well be that I'm going to do Ravenwood 2 and Ravenwood 3 back-to-back, so that I'll wind up with 200,000 words of Tanith Fairport, which will then be divided into two separate books, each one with its own story. I'm liking the way that's shaking out. I think that might actually work well, because I'm already immersed in this universe, and I can do a release, write something else, and come back to Tanith Fairport after a few more people have had an opportunity to discover it, and then release another book later in the spring. So there's that. The other thing that is perfectly clear to me at this point, and which has been pointed out to me on numerous occasions from a variety of people, Brand Gamblin, Deborah Geary, many others, have pointed out that at the rate that I produce words, 5,000 words a day is about a morning's worth of work for me. This is true. If I had a writing habit, and I know I said I wasn't going to look at process, but if I had a writing habit that said 5,000 words a day, start at the first of the month, I'll have a 100,000 word novel by the 20th. Now, that assumes I work 5,000 words a day, every day, 7 days a week for 20 days. You know, that's not an unreasonable amount. That's not an unreasonable goal. Particularly since during the week I can probably write more than 5,000 words and can actually take more time off on the weekends when my time is likely to be disrupted by family and other kinds of chore-like activities. Not that families are chores, but chores tend to happen when there are more people in the house so that there are many hands to make the work somewhat lighter. So the question becomes, how many books can I write in 2012? Now, I like a good challenge, and I had initially considered perhaps I would shoot for 12 books in 12 months. That would be an interesting challenge to try to do. The downside is that if I fail early in the year, if I don't make my book in March, then the incentive to try to continue and do, say, 11 books in a year will be reduced, which is unfortunate. So I think what I'm going to try to do is a book every other month, 6 books a year. So I've got a month to write and a month to edit and podcast, that I'll have the time I need to create the work, to edit the work, to podcast the work, and in some cases actually publish the work through the year in 2012. Which will give me an opportunity and plenty of opportunity to explore some of these books like Ishmael Huang and Tanith Fairport, and even get back into writing some novellas about Odin's Outpost. So, wow, chatter, 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 walk, 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 I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is, as I always say here, another day.